This is Passion for Life month. In the run-up to Easter, we are spending these morning and evening services looking at something more. Find the something you're looking for. And we're looking at things like purpose, hope, and tonight we're thinking about joy. So finding the joy you're looking for. And as I said, there are going to be some personal stories, testimonies, as we go through this month, from people who can are relating to that theme on any given Sunday morning or evening. So I hope that you find that interesting and helpful. If you didn't manage to hear this morning's sermon, if you weren't in church this morning, feel free to go onto YouTube and you can listen to it, where Wayne was speaking about find the purpose we're looking for. And there's more services coming up over the course of the next month as we wrestle and think about these things. So at each service in this series, as Jake already mentioned, we're going to be looking at one of the books of the Bible to help us with our thoughts. And for the purposes of tonight, I don't want to assume that you know the Bible. There might be some folks here who don't know the Bible. You may have some preconceived ideas about the Bible. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time thinking about the Bible and giving you some context and background to the book of Luke. And if you already know all of this, you can just phase out for that little bit and then come back and join us again. You're going to have to listen through those bits of insight that I'm going to try and offer. So I've got my Bible here. I'm going to be reading from this tonight. And the Bible itself is actually more like a library than a book in its own right. It's made up of lots of different books by different authors, written in different styles and for different reasons. Just like any decent library, lots of different kinds of books. There's books for the history buffs. There's poetry that speaks to our imaginations. There's letters between friends and stories for those who just like a good yarn. Here's the introduction that's printed at the start of my Bible. I just thought it was quite helpful to set the scene. Welcome to the Bible, a book that is like no other in the world. It's a collection of 66 different books written by at least 40 different authors from a variety of cultures over a period of 1,500 years. Yet running through it is the common theme of God's love and practical concern for the world. So, the Bible. And as Jake and Joy have already said tonight, we're looking at the book of Luke tonight, and that's one of the Gospels. You may have heard of the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John wrote the four Gospels that we have at the beginning of the New Testament. And the word Gospel simply means good news. And that's what they are trying to share. They're each written by a different person from a different perspective, highlighting different aspects of and events from Jesus's life. They vary in style, in emphasis, and are the particular details that they choose to emphasize, particular things that they want to bring forward, which is exactly what you'd expect from four different people describing the same events or the same person from their own personal viewpoints. I'm going to say a little bit more about the particular gospel that we're focusing on a bit later, but for now, let's set the Gospel of Luke to one side. As we've said, we're thinking about joy tonight. And I wonder if I can just ask you, what comes to your mind when you think about that word, joy, or when you hear that word, joy? What images come to mind? I could get you to close your eyes and think about that for a moment. What ambitions or hopes does that single word stir up within you? If you type the word joy into Google, you get some interesting results. One of the first is a link that appeared when I tried it was to a website called With Joy. It's a wedding planning website. My own daughter used it for her wedding last year. And of course, weddings can be events full of joy and happiness. Another link was to a clothing website, a women's clothing website, as it happened, because sometimes new things, beautiful things, or sometimes things that just make us feel comfortable can spark a sense of joy, can't they? Adverts mention joy or perhaps imply joy. I was going to use the tagline from AlpKit. I like going hill walking and doing a bit of cycling. And AlpKit are equipment and clothing providers for the outdoor type. One of their taglines is, do nice things, go nice places. Joy, you'd resonate with that, I think. But as it happened, I actually got an email from AlpKit this afternoon. from their marketing team, because I signed up for their marketing stuff, and it is headed A Different Kind of Joy. We made it through the bite of winter, getting out as much as we could, even when the weather had other ideas. Now, with the first taste of spring sun, we feel the need to stretch our legs, to extend those evening runs and rides, to turn dips into swims, and fill longer days with a different kind of joy. So adverts play to our aspirations for joy, our hopes for joy and happiness. Sometimes they do that subtly, and sometimes not so subtly. Sometimes we might think it's actually a little bit kind of false advertising, what they're advertising. It's not really joy that's going to last. Alternatively, yesterday morning, as I was thinking about this evening again, I was sitting by the window in our dining room with my first cup of coffee of the day. I can assume that any coffee drinkers love their first cup of coffee. I was thinking about tonight. It was a beautiful morning, bright blue skies. Birds were singing in the trees. Some of them were swooping down and feeding on our bird feeder. The flowers in the bush in our front garden are just starting to turn yellow. Bulbs are pushing up through the soil and tiny leaves are starting to bud on the branches. Just those first signs of spring. And isn't that making us all feel happier and more joyful in these last few days? Perhaps you have that same sense of joy on a crisp, beautiful morning. Or perhaps for you, it's the chance to relax at the weekend, to do some things that are fun. Perhaps it's your work. Maybe you take real satisfaction in what you do and you find joy in it. And if I were to ask you to close your eyes, I'm sure you could think of a memory, a place that you've been. Maybe it's standing by the sea, hearing the waves crashing, or being up on a mountain on a clear day, or sitting beside a river, hearing it trickle or gurgle or even rush and crash past you for a bigger river. Maybe it's time spent with friends or a favorite meal or the smell of something fragrant that reminds you of home. These kinds of experiences, these sparks of joy, have moved a lot of people over the years to write songs and poems, to paint, to create, and to celebrate the beauty of the world around them. I found this poem online. Apologies, John, it's probably not the best poem in the world. It does not arrive with a fanfare or a red carpet spread on the floor. It doesn't wait for the perfect moment or knock at the grandest door. It sneaks in with the morning coffee or a sunbeam on the tree. It shares a smile with a stranger and sets the spirit free. And that kind of joy that I'm talking about there are very human experiences, aren't they? But they're things that we can relate to. And these examples really ring true for me, and maybe they do for you as well. And the Bible also talks about that kind of joy. There's lots of examples of joy expressed in the Bible. That might surprise you if you don't know the Bible. You think the Bible is an austere, forbidding book. But actually, it talks a lot about joy, joy in creation. Psalm 65 says, "The meadows are covered with flocks, and the valleys are mantled with grain. They shout for joy and spring." And who doesn't like a lamb gambling in the field in springtime? Psalm 19 says, and there's lots of poetry here, real poetry, real evocative language. "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech, they use no words, no sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the end of the world. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. It's like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises at one end of the heavens and makes its circuit to the other. Nothing is deprived of its warmth." Really evocative, poetic language. There's the joy of a wedding. Jeremiah, the prophet, says, "There will be heard once more the sounds of joy and gladness, the voices of bride and bridegroom." There's the joy of good food and wine. Psalm 104 says, "Wine that gladdens the human hearts, bread that sustains their hearts." There's even a proverb that compares the joy that perfume brings to your nose with the joy a good friend brings to your heart. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartfelt advice. I don't know what you think of the Bible, what you think it's about, but one thing it doesn't do is ignore joy in the small and the ordinary and the everyday. It actually affirms joy in those things. But as joy was touching on earlier, there can be a problem with what we think of as joy in this modern world. Joy talked about them being fun tokens to spend, which I quite liked. Much of our joy, I think, feels like a bit of a sugar rush. It's sweet for a moment, but it doesn't sustain us. We chase those small hits of happiness, but don't find lasting satisfaction. That poem that I read earlier continues like this. So when the day feels heavy and your heart is worn and slow, look for the tiny, quiet sparks and let your own light glow. For joy is not a destination, but a visitor in the fray, ready to choose you gently in the middle of the day. And there's a second poem I found that begins, joy is the spark that warms the cold, a fleeting sweetness, bright and bold, a glimpse of light the heart can see. It's just a spark. It's just fleeting. It's just a glimpse. And our lived experience, I said, if you were to close your eyes and think of a joyful thing, you would be able to do that. But often those things are temporary, aren't they? I could just as easily ask you to close your eyes and to think of something that's happened in your life that is sorrowful, that's sad, that's full of tears and pain. And you could do that just as easily. Joy is just one side of a coin, with sorrow and pain, difficulty and struggle being the other side of that coin. I heard when I was thinking about tonight, a few weeks ago, someone talk about joy and sorrow being like two parallel train tracks in our lives. Joy and sorrow run alongside each other. And the problem with spring, lovely season though it is, it leads to something that we sometimes call in this country summer, and then autumn, and then winter. And yes, in case you don't know me very well, this flask is probably about 50% water and 50% air by now, but I can tell you definitely it is half empty. And the poem that I just read a moment ago about joy being the spark and fleeting sweetness. Joy is the spark that warms the cold, a fleeting sweetness, bright and bold, a glimpse of light the heart can see. But is there more? God means it to be. So now we're going to get to Luke 4, at long last, I hear you say. I'm going to look at Luke chapter 4, and I'm going to read from verse 14. If you've got a Bible, or perhaps on your phone, or if you're sitting next to someone with a Bible, then they can share it with you. So Luke chapter 4, verse 14. It says, Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up, and on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." As I said earlier, I'm going to give a little bit of background to Luke for you in case you're unfamiliar with it. It was written by a guy named Luke, funnily enough, who was a companion of Paul, who you may have heard of, one of the first missionaries who spread the good news about Jesus. And you'll find he's mentioned in the book of Acts, which was also written by Luke. And Paul also wrote a lot of the letters which make up our New Testament, the second part of our Bibles. He wrote a lot of those letters to the early churches which he'd helped to set up and to start. Luke was a careful historian and is understood to be a doctor. He wasn't one of the original disciples, but he set out to write this book as an orderly account. We read this morning from Luke chapter 1, verse 1, and I'm just going to read those first few verses here now. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. So we've got Luke, who's a careful historian. He's been speaking to people who were eyewitnesses of the things that Jesus did, and he's decided to record it in this account for Theophilus, who's perhaps a patron or a new believer, and he's writing it so that he can understand the story of Jesus more clearly. So, in Luke chapter 4, Jesus is right at the start of his public ministry in Luke's account here. Jesus has come back to Galilee. He's teaching in the synagogues. Word about him is spreading. He goes to Nazareth, which is his hometown, and he attends the synagogue. And he's presented with a scroll from another part of the Bible. In our Bibles, it's in the Old Testament. But for the Jews growing up in that time, that was the scriptures. They didn't have the New Testament. It's part of a text that would be very familiar to everyone in the synagogue, part of the Jewish holy text, the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, written about 700 years before Jesus was born. I don't know what you think the Bible is about. I don't know what you think when you've read it or what your preconceptions of it are. In some senses, the Bible is like a mirror. Despite the fact that it's really old and it's written from in another time and another culture, we can hold it up against our own lives and it reflects our experiences, a lot of what we see and we experience around us. It reflects our human reality. I've already talked about the way it reflects our joys. It also reflects our sorrows. It contains the full range of human experience. If I read again from that welcome, intro at the start of my Bible, it says, in it there are tales of great courage, faith, and daring, matched by examples of extreme human stupidity and evil. So the Bible doesn't hide suffering or pretend it doesn't exist. As I gave you examples of joy, there are also examples of sorrow and suffering. If you turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1, there's a story of a young woman who's unable to have children. And we read all about her pain in that. I read from a couple of the Psalms that were full of joy, but you can equally find Psalms that are full of lament. I read a little bit from Jeremiah about a young couple, a bride and a bridegroom, and the joy that they bring. But Jeremiah was known as the weeping prophet. And Isaiah, that Jesus quotes from here, was speaking to a people who had been exiled, who knew loss, who knew hardship and disappointment. So whilst the Bible is, in some senses, a mirror that we can hold up to our own lives and see our own lives reflected in it, joy, sorrow, courage, evil, stupidity, it's even more a message about God and a message, dare I say, hope and joy. As I say, Jesus is reading from this section in Isaiah that speaks to a people who've known exile, loss, hardship, and disappointment. They're longing for restoration, longing for God to step in, to put things right, to bring hope where there's been despair and joy where there's been sorrow. And what is God's message through Isaiah? If you look at verse 18 and 19, the message is good news to the poor, freedom for captives, recovery of sight for the blind, release for the oppressed, and the year of the Lord's favor. For generations, for 700 years, those words have stirred hope in the hearts of Jewish people. They were understood to be pointing forward to the Messiah, the anointed one, the chosen one that God would send to rescue his people. That person that would bring God's healing, his justice, his restoration and joy. So when Jesus stands up, reads that passage out loud, rolls up the scroll and sits back down again and says, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing," he's claiming something absolutely extraordinary. He's saying that the hope you've been carrying for centuries, the promise of freedom and restoration, this longing for God to act, it's happening now in me. Jesus proclaims joy that people can experience healing, restoration, and liberation. And I guess we can read that text in a couple of ways. Jesus lived in a time in Israel where it was being oppressed. They were living under a foreign ruler, the Romans. There were poor people. There were prisoners. There was the blind, the oppressed. There were outcasts. There was poverty. There was sickness. There was exclusion. Those were the realities of the day. So Jesus, yes, speaking to those situations, but actually Jesus is speaking about deeper realities to his hearers and to us. He's speaking about spiritual poverty, spiritual prison, spiritual blindness, spiritual oppression. And he also speaks to us, as I say. We're also poor and we need good news. We're also prisoners who need to be set free. A little bit of Joy's testimony, I think, touched on that a little bit. Being addicted to fun tokens and to spending fun tokens. We're also blind and we need sight. I think Joy would be okay with me saying she needed her eyes opened from blindness. We're oppressed and we need freedom. Jesus' message in Luke 4 is that he offers us joy, not as a fleeting feeling, but a promise and a purpose. When Jesus reads from Isaiah 61, he's announcing the restoration that God had promised 700 years before. He's announcing that that has arrived. Good news for the poor, freedom for the captive, sight for the blind, hope for the oppressed. And I talked earlier about the things that bring us joy, some of those things that perhaps are fleeting. There is joy in the world. We do see it around about us. We can see it on a bright blue sky spring morning. The Bible affirms that. But the message this evening is that there can also be joy despite the world around us, despite the sorrow, despite the sadness, despite the pain. And it's not just the power of positive thinking. It's not just being optimistic, which I struggle with, of denying what's going on around about us and in the world. But it's joy rooted not in our circumstances, but in the reality that God is acting, God is restoring, God is putting broken things back together. In other words, the joy that we can find as a result of Jesus' message here in Luke 4 is not just a sugar rush emotion. It's a deep, steady, continuing joy that comes from knowing Jesus, knowing that he has stepped into the world to bring good news, to heal and to set free. He's the fulfillment of God's promise to bring lasting joy to weary, hurting and sorrowful people. People who are poor in spirit, people who are prisoners, blind and oppressed. People like Joy, people like me, people like all of us. I mentioned earlier that Luke worked alongside this guy, Paul. And if you read his letters in the Bible, you'll see he writes a lot about joy and suffering, about how we can focus on joy despite our struggles. And I just wanted to read a short paragraph from this book by a guy called Tim Chester. It's called Enjoying God. I just want to read a few words from this, if I could. Paul once described himself in the book of 2 Corinthians as having nothing and yet possessing everything. A few lines later, he adds, "In all our troubles, my joy knows no bounds." How can we have nothing and possess everything? How can we have troubles and boundless joy? The answer is that faith looks beyond our circumstances to our relationship with God. Christianity is about a relationship with God, and it is about a relationship with God that brings joy. And that relationship with God starts in Jesus. Jesus brings a gospel message, a good news message of joy. It's not Christmas time, but one of my favourite carols is Joy to the World. I was thinking about this subject of joy over Christmas, and Joy to the World is one of my favourite carols, I think. And I was listening to a relatively new version of that carol this Christmas, and there's a section where it breaks out from the kind of traditional old words and speaks about joy, unspeakable joy. Now, I don't want my message tonight about joy and real and lasting joy to be one of false advertising, like I was talking about later. There will be sorrow and difficulty, pain and struggle. My cup is still definitely half empty. I'm still learning. Joy is still learning, and I was really struck by what you said, Joy, about knowing joy being a past thing, a present thing, and a future thing. I think that's really helpful. She's still learning. We can all know that joy. You can know that joy. We'll experience sorrow in life. No one is exempt. And this kind of joy is a gift from God. It's not fleeting. It's not a sugar rush. If there's something that I've said tonight that struck a chord, please come and speak to me afterwards. If something struck your chord and you'd like to speak to Joy or Jake, come and do that as well. If you'd like to find out more, that we are running these services over the next month, as I say, looking at these different topics. But there are some booklets that you can take away at the end, thinking more about these kinds of things. And we're also running a course on April the 12th, I've got the right date here, called the 3-2-1 course, which is going to be looking at some of the fundamentals of the Christian faith, if you'd like to find out more. I'm just going to close with two things. One of them, the poem that I read earlier, or a bit of it, and also a verse, a few verses from Luke, a little bit earlier in Luke. "Joy is the spark that warms the cold, a fleeting sweetness, bright and bold. A glimpse of light the heart can see, but is there more? God means it to be." And here's Luke's reference to the coming of Jesus, the birth of Jesus. "There were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them. And they were terrified. But the angel said to them, 'Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Saviour has been born to you. He's the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you, and you will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger.'" Our joy, our lasting joy, comes from that relationship with God. And that relationship with God starts and ends with Jesus. Thank you.